Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Elaine B. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today's date is Wednesday, February 26th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting. Today we're reading from the big book, the chapter Working with Others. We're on page 92, paragraph 2. Which begins with continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. Today's readers are for the 12 Steps, Tamara C., 12 Traditions, Miriam Rivka H., and our readers are Abby S., Kathy Jo P., Dawn P. Janice PM will greet newcomers and get sponsor numbers at the end of the meeting, and Leslie W. has some important announcements for you. The reference number for the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting for yesterday, Tuesday, February 25th, is 14172. That's 14172. And the reference number for today's 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, Wednesday, February 26th, is 14174. That's 14174. DOA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a vision for you, Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I'll now ask Tamara C. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Tamara C., gratefully recovered in California. I'm so glad to be on the meeting with everyone. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to give service.
Thank you for your service, Tamara C. I'll now ask Miriam Rivka H. to please read the 12 traditions.
Thank you. This is Miriam Rivka H. in New Jersey, the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OAS Satch ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks so much, Mary Mariska H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted using star 1, please. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter Working with Others on page 92, and we're reading the second paragraph. I'll ask Abby S. to please begin reading.
Hello, this is Abby S. from Southern California. Thanks for letting me be of service. I'm on page 92. Is it continue to speak of alcoholism? Is that where we're starting?
Yes, please.
Okay. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of the body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Just the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it empathetic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. Okay, that is so good. That's such a long paragraph, so much to comment on. What this reminds me of, like, the first thing I thought of after reading this is step one. Like, someone who's ready to get well knows step one already. Like, and, like, when I'm in that state of complete hopelessness and despair and desperation, and I feel like I'm dying, and I mean, like, I can remember my step one, and thank God I can remember my step one, because I mean, I've had many step ones, but like, I can remember the last one, and I never ever ever want to go back there. And so to to be able to, like, identify with someone with that is, I mean, I'm happy to share that because I'm not there anymore. And so, you know, sharing that with someone who's in the disease, like who's at that place of hopelessness, that's such a sweet spot to be, because that was the point where I was willing to do anything. I was willing to do anything. And if someone just told me what to do, you know, just tell me what to do. And that's kind of how I was with my sponsor. Just tell me what to do and I'll do anything. And that is such a great place to be as a sponsor and a sponsee. And then also, I love how it says he has become very curious to know how you got well, because there was a point in my recovery where I was going around telling everyone everything about everything, and, you know, just like it to people that didn't really care or have a problem, or, you know, like I was trying to push myself on people. But I like how they say he's become curious to know, because let him ask you the question if he will. When people start, I don't mention it, you know, when I have my food plan, or like when I'm bringing my own meals to things, like I don't, or when I decline, like, no, thank you to whatever they're offering me. I don't say anything, but it's interesting to see, you know, the people that are curious about, especially the ones who have an issue with food, who, like, I could tell they've said things, or, you know, like they can't stop eating or whatever. And when they start asking me, then it's like, I just give a little more information. And then if they continue asking, I give a little more information, you know, and I never just like share everything. But, as for the God part, I don't really mention like God or Jesus or anything like that. Sometimes if I feel like they're atheist or if they're agnostic, like I very much was and can sometimes still be, I'll just say universe, you know, just like, have you ever just like put it out to the universe, you know, like there has to be like, just put it out to the universe. And that has helped me. It's just such a general broad concept of God without saying the word. So I love the
central reminder.
I love all of you guys, and I heard that, and I'm all done. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you so much for your share, Abby S. All right, who else wants to comment on this awesome paragraph, page 92, paragraph 2?
Rod
Janice P.
Irene B.
Donna, Janice P.M.
Verse E.
Janice P.M. Verse E. Donna D. Okay, I heard Roz G, Eileen B, Donna B, Janice PM, Bruce E. Was there somebody else in there? I'm sure there was, but I didn't catch that. Okie dokie, let's go with that for now. Roz G, Eileen B, Donna B, or Irene B maybe, Janice PM, and Bruce E. So Roz, please go ahead. You're followed by Eileen C. I believe it is. We'll see. Irene might have been.
Hello, my beautiful Elaine.
Hey, Roz.
Donna. It was Donna B.
Okay, I got you, Donna B. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Yes. My name is Roz G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And I have 231 days of abstinence and 7.61 months, thanks to the OA app, which keeps track of my days. But, you know, it took a lot of pain for me to get there, to get here, because I've been around a long time. But what does that tell me, and that I can share with you, is that I had a lot of pride and an ego, you know, a huge ego, not willing to admit, not wanting to admit that I am one of you, that I belong, that I am a part. And I share with new people. Okay. Of course, I didn't want to share this before. I didn't want to share the real issues. But I can freely say to any newcomers that are on this line today, I used to do coffee enemas, okay? Coffee enemas. And that's called, that's another word for laxative abuse, you know? And I took over, I did over 20 diets. I know that's nothing to you guys, but it is to me. And all the pills, every different kind of pill I could try to take, you know? And that's what I share. But I would not share that before. I was just too proud. I was too embarrassed. I didn't want a group of overeaters to know that I had an overeating problem. Is that funny or what? You know, it's just the twisted mental, you know, the twisted character I had and just the huge sense of pride and, you know, just not wanting anybody to know that I make mistakes. Well, guess what? I make mistakes. And I had to go through a lot of pain. And, you know, I also share that I would go on these laxative things and that, you know, I had to lie.
Ross, we're not hearing you. Did you hit mute by accident?
I'm so sorry about this.
Nope, I hear you now.
Yeah,
got
I mean, you know, apologize for that. It's the air, you know. I just want to, you know, just to sum it all up by saying that it's very important for me to share the gutter problems that I have had, because my ears perk up when somebody shares them with me, and then I have that automatic identification, and we can go on from there. And with that, I pass. Thank you. Sorry about the interruption.
No problem, Rachi. Thanks for your share. Okay, Eileen B, maybe, or Irene B? Irene B.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for your service. You have bionic ears. My name is Irene.
Irene, you're going to be followed by Donna. Just want to let her know she's next in the queue. Please go ahead.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I am Irene with an R, Irene B, a very gratefully recovering bulimic from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You know, I get so embarrassed that I keep speaking about the gratitude that I have towards this meeting. That goes without saying. But I love the instructions, like I say repeatedly. And in this paragraph, we're talking about, you know, letting go of our pride and being open and honest about how bad it really was. And I speak of myself as being a recovering bulimic, but, you know, I never talk about the details of what that was like. And it was pretty horrid. It was debilitating. It was, it made me non-functional. It separated me from life because I lived to prepare for my next binge. And my binges were not binge once and done. It's like I did that repeatedly until exhaustion set in and it was time to go to bed. And when things were really, really bad, I'd take a 1-2 hour nap at nighttime and wake up and watch movies and binge again and just go through this repeatedly. And I can't tell you the number of times that I watched a movie that I wasn't there. I had, you know, then at some time in the future, I would see the same movie thinking that I'd never seen it, and then I recognized a scene from there. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I've seen this movie before. I mean, that happened many, many times simply because I completely went to La La Land as I was eating. I completely disassociated from this world using the food in the most terrible of ways. And, you know, 4 inpatient, 4 outpatient centers, $1 million worth of therapy. And when I came into these rooms, I didn't think they would be a solution. I didn't think I would, I thought I was an incurable one. But my sponsor, it's another long story, she said, just trust the process. And I knew that the 12-step programs work for alcoholics. So it's like, well, if you work for them, you know, give it a shot. Try it. Why do I have to lose? I'm out of options. And I
just
tried
a reminder.
It worked. Thank you so much. And I'm just grateful that I opened my eyes to my mind to the possibility that the program could work, gave it a chance, not believing that it would, but it did. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Irene B. And Donna B, you're up next, and you're followed by Janice T.M.
Thank you. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver. And what jumps out at me is that he's become very curious to know how you got well. And what I'm thinking about is not necessarily the person on the street who's never heard of Overeaters Anonymous, but the person in the rooms, especially in my face-to-face meetings, who have been suffering for many years. I have been in Overeaters Anonymous for 17 years, and for many of those years, I was able to abstain from my alcoholic foods, but I continue to volume eat. Maybe once every 3 to 4 weeks, I would have an episode where I would eat a lot of my quote-unquote abstinent food. One night, I ate an entire chuck roast. There was a time I sat down and ate 8 red peppers. And I felt shame and regret and remorse. And I knew that this was not, you know, good behavior. But I really thought it was the best it would get for me. And there were a lot of people around me who told me that that was good enough. You know, I wasn't eating sugar or flour or alcohol, that it was okay. And about 2 years ago, by the grace of God, and I really don't know how, to be honest, the thought came in that said, this isn't enough. This isn't good enough. There has to be better. And that meant for me that I had to do more in my program of recovery, more than I had ever done. And what was the turning point for me was becoming willing, anytime I had a food thought, anytime I had a thought about weight, anytime I had a thought about alcohol or volume eating or anything, I knew without a doubt that I would never win against that thought, and I would begin to reach out to people and just be completely honest and transparent and say, I'm struggling with body image. I'm struggling with the desire to volume eat. And so what I'm thinking about in regards to this curious to know how you got well, I have to remind myself often to meet people where they are. Today, I pack my meals and eat, bring my Tupperware into restaurants because I enjoy
gentle
the company
reminder.
Of my friends. Not everyone is ready to bring their Tupperware into a restaurant. So with that, I pass. I wish I could say more to continue my main point, but I will pass. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dana. Donna. So Janice PM, you are up next, and you're followed by Bruce E. And then we'll take another lineup on page 92, paragraph 2.
Well, thank you, Elaine B. If you, and I know you will, time me, please. My name is Janice PM, and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Okay, we're reminded in this book of over 80 years what to do. And guess what? It's still working. This is still what we do. Well, what I do anyway, from the instructions. And it says in the second paragraph, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. So the first thing I do is, you know, I may remind, well, they're new. So how do I continue to speak of alcoholism? Well, what I do is I emphasize the powerlessness of this illness because of the allergy and the unmanageability because of my compulsive overeating mind. All right, because that's the problem. That's really the problem. And I tell them my story, you know, how I act abnormally to certain foods, and I just do. You know, my husband could have eaten a donut and stopped and not want the rest of them. But with my body, it did something to my body, that particular substance is in the donut. And eating behaviors that I had uncontrollable cravings that I never could get enough. My mind would say, oh no, you know, you're not going to have any more, you know, because if when you indulge in this, you know what's going to happen. But, you know, compared to a normal eater who doesn't get that cravings, they can't experience this unease that I get. And the discomfort when they have too much to eat, I'm just starting. I don't get discomforted. So I tell them and I illustrate it in me how that's the allergy. That's what they call the allergy, which is the phenomenon of craving, which not everybody has it. But if you have it just once, you're one of us. So in this way, the person, you know, can see, and we can talk about the many excuses and the many reasons I gave for myself for going back. And boy, I had some good excuses, but that was never the problem. It never was really justified because I was overpowered by my thinking. This is what I told them. This is how we speak more of what alcoholism is. Stupid ideas. If I'm standing, you know, that doesn't count. All those reasons and methods. But now we're going to, you know, put the two ideas together, the allergy of the body and the unreasonableness of the mind. This is what alcoholism is all about. I could stop many times. Oh, many
gentle
times.
Reminder.
Yes, thank you. Progressively, but I couldn't stop from starting again. And that was my mind. Oh, they say I did that too. So anyway, that's what alcoholism really is. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice DM. So after Brucey shares next, we'll take another lineup for comments on working with others, page 92, paragraph 2, which begins, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. Please go ahead, Brucey.
Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Let's see, this Brucey, and I'm pretty much been a low-bottom compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. If you're satisfied he's a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him how your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Okay, so this queer mental condition, which I have, surrounding this first bite, prevents normal functioning of my willpower. So I got willpower, you know, but man, it's shot through with holes of this addiction because it's prevented, okay, the willpower is prevented because of this queer mental condition. So I'm talking to an alcoholic, I'm talking to a food addict here. I'm to share with him my experience and him or her. And if he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him possibly he can. So I've had a lot of people say, well, you know, I've just made a decision that when I go to this particular place, I only eat 5 of these. Well, you know, I've been there too. And I thought I could get away with that. Never works. But the disease itself beat me into a position where I had to come in and find help. And I came into these rooms and I got help. And so now wife had surgery 3.5 weeks ago, so I've been out of the loop a little bit, but stayed absent all the way through that. And I'm having the same surgery on Tuesday. Appreciate your prayers. major surgery, and but I got a food plan worked out, pretty much don't have it totally worked out, talked to my sponsor already, and know what I'm going to have as far as pain meds go, so I don't have to worry about getting addicted back on drugs. But anyway, the thing is, I got to stay sober. I got to stay abstinent. And it says down here, but you can talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. We got a solution. We do absolutely have a solution that we understand that it's the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, or the chronic illness of the mind. And to understand that, first of all, is what happened to me. So my solution was, I came into these rooms, got a sponsor, started working through the steps, starting with doctor's opinion, found out about the allergy and the obsession of the mind. And the obsession and the compulsion started to lift. And I knew that something was happening that hadn't happened in my 25 years of slipping, being in a program, relapsing. My mind kept telling me I was doing good, but yet I wasn't. I kept slipping and going back into it. Finally, I found out there is a solution. If you'll soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. So, if he hears my thoughts and my history, he's most likely, if he's an alcoholic or a food addict, he's going to start admitting, yeah, that sounds like me. You know, he may not say it to me, but he's going to start identifying with that, because when I'm around other food addicts and they start talking about their history, I'm going, yeah, I'm, you know, either shaking my head yes, or I'm kind of nodding with my mind that, yeah, I identify with this. And even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you did well. Thank you very much. And people will get curious. How can I do this? How can I get this? How can I have some of this? So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Yes, we want everybody to get this. Who'd like to share their thoughts on how to get this?
Laura W.
Barbara E.
Laura W. Barbara
Rowena
E.
K.
Pamela R. B.
Marina K. Hang on just a second. Marina K. Pamela R. B. Hopefully I can read my writing when we get back to this. Okay.
Lynette.
Lynette. Was that T?
P is in Paul.
P is in Paul. And Matt.
Rossanne D. Detroit.
I'm not sure if there's room for you, Rossanne, but I'm going to put you down just in case, because we only had 5 in the previous lineup. So if I can read my own writing. Uh-oh. Okay, I have Laura W., and then I have, was it Brenda K.? Something like that. Started with a B, ends with a K, or last initial is K. Marina K., I believe. Please correct me. I tried to write this too quickly. Pamela R. B., Lynette T., Matt S., and Rossanne B. So Laura W., you're up first, followed by, Barbara.
Good morning.
B. That's what it was. Thank you. Laura W., please go ahead. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness. The writers of this book, when they want something hit home to us, they repeat it. And that's what it's telling us to do here. Continue. Keep going. Keep talking about alcoholism as an illness. You know, it's telling me to bring the prospect down. Bring them, show them how bad it's going to get. Don't show them the solution right now. Don't even talk about the solution. Explain that many are doomed and never realize their predicament. And, you know, talk about the hopelessness of alcoholism. Then they have the italics, you know, tell them exactly what happened to you. And I don't know about you, but as an addict, I love talking about myself. You know, I love telling people my story. And that's what it's telling us to do here. I'm good at that. I'm good at telling, you know, the escapades that I did, the things that I did to get my fix. But then it talks a little bit here about stressing the spiritual feature freely. Finally, here, what's the solution when it comes to food addiction for me? It's a spiritual malady. It's a hole in my soul. And this is where I stress it to the person. This is where I say, you know, a power greater than myself has done this. I have done nothing. The main thing that I've done is just become willing to take some action and believe in this power greater than myself. And again, in italics, it says that this person, all they need to do is believe in a power greater than themselves. And, you know, how has life been on self-will for you so far, I can ask them. How has running the show yourself worked for you? I don't know about you, but for me, it almost got me 6 feet under. So, you know, it does talk about the mental twist, but really it just tell them your story. Tell them what has happened to you. And then when somebody did that for me, I was nodding my head up and down like, oh, my gosh, I get it. Like, I wasn't the only one that got a high from starving myself. I wasn't the only one that got, you know, a rush, a sense of control by not eating. And then when I had the binge, you know, because I can't go that long without not eating, the binge, you know, I got a sense of remorse and the allergy that kicked in. So, you know, identify freely and let the other person identify in, and that's what we're doing here. We're letting them identify in rather than, you know, our whole lives we've always identified out. So thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you very much, Laura W. Okay, Barbara E., you are up next, followed by Marina K. Barbara E.?
Did you say Barbara E.?
Yes, I did.
Wow, I didn't think you'd heard me. I am so impressed with your bionic ears. That's amazing. That is amazing. Well, I have to tell you that I have been on many diet programs, and they all work. They work for certain people, but they didn't work for me. Because while I could get abstinent, I couldn't stay abstinent. And I never knew when I would lose it. And when I lost it, the binges got longer and longer, and the periods of abstinence shorter and shorter. I needed a spiritual transformation. That's not what I came into OA for. I came in for a diet. But Bill, throughout the entire book, uses a number of construction references. He talks about the foundation. The foundation of our program is only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. That was hard. I thought I had the power. I just didn't know when I'd lose it. And then I thought the power was in my refrigerator because the light was always on in the middle of the night, and I was a night eater. And the feeling I've shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. And of course, the cornerstone. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? I had no choice. I was desperate. I knew I didn't have another diet in me. Doctors had warned me of all kinds of dire consequences. But it had to be proven over and over again to this simple-minded lady that I needed to find this power, the keystone, the how and why of it. I had to quit playing God because it wasn't working. And God is a gentleman. He only goes where he's invited. And I had to invite him in. Just be willing to clear off the window, open it a crack, and wait for it to come. And it did come, and it didn't come quickly, but it came. And it can come to anyone who's struggling to get the program or get back into the program. There is a path to freedom, and this is the book. We read it, we understand it, we call others, we rely on the fellowship. Thank you so much. I pass, Miss Bionic Ears.
Thanks so much, Barbara E. Okay, Marina K., you're up next, followed by Palomar B.
Hi, my name is Rowena Kay.
Rowena, thank you so much. Sorry about that.
Recovering compulsive overeater. What I notice about this paragraph is that it starts with the problem, you know, the fatal malady, and finishes with the solution. The main thing that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and live by spiritual principles. For me, food was my solution. And I kept going there because it gave me immediate gratification. It gave me a hit. And in the beginning of recovery, and even now sometimes, you know, the gratification I get from my higher power and the program isn't immediate. You know, it takes time. And that's why it didn't appeal to me in the beginning. You know, I kept, you know, praying. And, well, I didn't keep praying. I prayed once, got nothing out of it, and thought, well, this doesn't really work, does it? Because, you know, when I went to chocolate, I got a solution immediately with that. But over time, I'm learning that, you know, I'm just as willing now to go to a higher power that I can't see as I was to go to chocolate, which killed me every time. And that was a gem I actually heard on an outreach, you know, being willing to go to my higher power as I was to run to a solution that doesn't work in food. And so, yeah, I'm feeling very grateful for that. And I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I love that. Okay, Palomar B, you're up next, and you're followed by Lynette P.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Elaine B., right? I'm Pamela R. B. From Detroit, Michigan. Just so grateful to be on the line this morning, boy. And also to be on this particular paragraph. I sponsor and I am dealing with this exact same issue right now, being able to, I won't say we sell this program, but being able to help people to identify in. And I think that's very important, and it's beautifully stated in this paragraph, you know. Nobody likes to be talked down to or, you know, given you must, you whatever. And what I know when I came in the program, it was somebody who shared their story with me, a one-on-one. And when they shared their story, I initially, and then they gave me that little pamphlet to answer the questions. And my disease, mine, refuted every one of them. But upon further reflection, I was able to sit quietly and look at it again and think about the story and then read those questions. And sure enough, I can answer every one of them. So, you know, even though I didn't get it right away, it didn't come to me right away. It was about 6 weeks later that I walked into the room and all I could do was cry. Because I was home. And that's what this is allowing me to see, is that this is the place where I could begin. This was a new home for me, recovery process. You know, it is an illness. And nobody ever said that to me. You know, it was like, well, you're just weak-willed. You know, you just need another, you know, you need another diet. You need another, you know, Weight Watchers program, whatever it was. You know, that's what I thought, but it was through reading this book that I found out that I had an illness. And, you know, when you have an illness, generally, there's usually a prognosis of some sort that can occur if you follow the prescription. And the prescription for me is in this book. You know, it's in the 12 Steps of Recovery. And that's what I did. But initially, I had to put the food down. So I am very grateful to be able to carry this message to others and to be able to share my story. You know, I felt like that. I felt that way too, you know. And I know for me, that's how I was able to hear what I needed to hear when I was able to release what I thought I knew about diets and accept the fact that I'm a compulsive overeater and I have an illness. And today, I do what's necessary to keep that illness in remission. So I'm very grateful to be here today. And thank you all for allowing me to share.
Thank you very much, Pamela R.B. Lynette T., you are up next, and Matt S. will follow you. I'm not sure if we'll have time to do Rustam B., but we'll see. So please go ahead, Lynette.
Thank you, Elaine, and I want to thank everybody who has shared on this chapter so far for your insight and wisdom. These are great instructions for me, and as I read this chapter, each time I read it as somebody who's new, doesn't know about it, a new person, and still somebody a sponsor, a step guide, so I see it both ways, so I can easily identify with it. My experience in working with others, at least for the last few years, I have to say it's mainly a couple times outside of meetings, people that didn't know about the program at all, but mainly with those in meetings who have been struggling in the program, didn't know about vision, because certainly vision helps a lot, and I lead them to that. So as I talk about myself and my experience, yeah, it's in the meeting. You know, it's standing outside a meeting afterwards. It's speaking on the phone. And they can identify with that. They can identify with my experiences. And so, you know, that first line, as it has been mentioned, it's not a fatal malady, it's an illness. So that kind of relieves them in a way, of course, that no, it's not a matter of willpower. If they are a true compulsive overeater, this is an illness for them. You know, they don't have control, and then it kind of opens them up a little bit more to listening. Okay, we'll keep going here. So I think the doctor's opinion, as I work with somebody going through the doctor's opinion, it guides me through all of this in this chapter, you know, where I can, we can talk about the illness, we can talk about our my personal experience, do they identify with that, and usually they do. Of course, it's wonderful to get to that common solution rather than just the common problem, but some things that stuck out for them is talking about my own struggles before the program, in the program. Having been off sugar for a whole year and then, who knows why, bought a dozen donuts and drove around eating those donuts, and I was drunk. I was drunk on sugar, truly like an alcoholic, and then had a major relapse about 20 years ago, gained all my weight back plus more. That was 100 pounds. And they can very often identify with that, you know, just that struggle even in the program. So it's been very helpful for me in reading these instructions and getting to the spiritual solution because that is mentioned in the doctor's opinion also towards the end, is that spiritual solution, that is the only thing that can help a true compulsive overeater, which is always a good reminder for me if my mind starts to stray. And
gentle reminder.
Thank you. That new person can also be willing to keep going. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And Rustam B., I'm sorry, there's not going to be time for you. And we have time for about a 2 minutes. So please go ahead, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's fine. I never know what to say to people because my experience in this program is so incredibly atypical. I wasn't, yesterday was a year and a day of abstinence for me. And the things that were true for me a year and 3 days ago were that I'd been alive for about 17,565 days. And for about 17,560 of them, I was a compulsive overeater who was steeped in shame and self-loathing every day so much that I wasn't even aware of it anymore. And it wasn't like I never tried anything. I had gastric bypass surgery back in 2003. But there was nothing anyone could have said to me or did say to me that caused me to understand the problem that I had and the solution for it. And it wasn't until 1 year and 3 days ago that I was on a trip and there were high winds in the Midwest and I wound up taking a 17-hour drive and doing research for my job, searched for a step study to listen to on the drive, and because one of the major online service providers that I searched in knows me really well, it was like, Overeaters Anonymous step study. And it was 20 minutes later that I heard Larry C. say, for me, there are some foods that once I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop from starting. And those words fell into my ears in just the right way at just the right moment, that 2 days later, I got abstinent. And 1 year ago tomorrow, I went to my first meeting, and that was 1 year and 1 day and 360 pounds ago. And my life is so much better. This isn't about winning an argument with someone. It's just about sharing what happened to me in the hopes that some of my words fall into their ears in just the right way, that they find their way onto the path. And I'm just going to keep telling that story to everyone who will listen, because that's the only way I know to help someone onto this path. And with that, I pass.
Congratulations, Matt F. That's great news. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who shared today and came and listened, and just so glad you're here. We're going to now transition the meeting by reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Kathy Jo P. please read a vision for you?
You betcha. Good morning, Kathy Jo P., recovered in Minnesota. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.